Susie Prez here for City Talk with City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton, City Mayor Shelby Ronstadt, and eventually Amy Tweeten, City Planner, will be joining us. This interview was recorded on Tuesday, July 18th. And welcome, Jennifer Stapleton and Shelby Ronstadt.
Thanks, Susie. Yeah. Pleasure to be here with you. And good morning, I think, to all your listeners.
It will be morning when they are listening to this tomorrow on Wednesday.
Thank you for having us again, Susie.
Yeah, and as I said when we were talking before we started the recording, this would be great to do because communication is essential. More and more people are listening to the morning show. And, it's, you know, for the city stuff, it's Wednesday, so here we go. Before we get started, I have a somewhat personal question for you, Jennifer. And Shelby, you could weigh in on this too. You've been with the city, Jennifer, for 7.5 years, and you know we all know that the mood, the population, will just say, but things are changing in our city. Change can be good, and there's such a thing as growing pains, and that can be good too. But what is your observation and feelings? We'll start with Jennifer about the current changes, the future, how the city's responding, and what we can do to make this a positive move forward as we grow and develop.
Well, thank you for the question, because I think all is true about the change and the growing pains. And from my perspective, it's all about balance, right? It's knowing that we can only control so much, and the influx of population, the increase in tourism, particularly that we saw coming out of COVID, you know, we hadn't planned for that. We couldn't have predicted that. And so there were a lot of things that then happened that put us in the position of reacting, and which is an ironic thing for this city, because I think one thing we have been really good at as a city historically, and we continue to do, is planning for the future. So you're planning for change, you're planning for growth, you're planning for things that are going to happen, but that acceleration that we've all experienced here in the community over the last 3 years, no one could have planned for it. And we had a lot of plans that spoke to how to respond to this, and how to get design that fit into the community. But then obviously we heard back from the community, and I think rightfully so, that there was a need for really pulling this together, the plans and what's happening currently, and responding. A lot of that led to the downtown waterfront competition, because particularly the concerns about downtown, and in addition to the growth and the tourism that we saw, then we also saw the loss of three buildings in our downtown too. So
yeah, that's absolutely true. And just fixing my monitor here, my headphones. Okay, so with that in mind, Mayor Ronstadt, what are your views on that same question?
Yeah, I agree with what Jennifer said. I think that we were as best positioned as we could have been going into the pandemic. You know, when Jennifer and I both came on at the same time, in fact, she was 2 days ahead of me.
Yeah, I have a longer tenure.
2 days.
Woo-hoo. 2 days, that's right. But right from the onset, our charge was to launch the city's first strategic plan. And what followed in addition to that was the most comprehensive master planning effort that the city's ever undertaken. In fact, you know, we're not aware of another city that's attempted anything quite like what we did. And it's still in process. Here we are 7.5 years later, and we've, for the most part, completed that effort, but we're still you know, crossing some T's and dotting some I's in that larger plan. And that we're going to talk more about the comprehensive plan later, but that is one of those last pieces that is yet to be complete. And there's a few kind of stragglers out there. We just passed the watershed recreation master plan a couple of months ago. That was also a historic moment for the city. Something that had been envisioned for a long time, for me personally, since I was on city council and first had that vision. So that's been a project that's been, you know, in the works for many years now. So all that to say that, you know, the city has been planning for years, doing really comprehensive, really forward-thinking master planning, and really in every aspect of city services over the last 7 years plus. And I'm really proud of the work that we did there, and that really set the city up so that we're prepared to be able to manage the growth that we're seeing now, to be able to manage that responsibly and make decisions that are community-driven decisions based on input that we've heard through our planning processes, to make sure that when we're accommodating that growth, that we're doing it in a way that the community wants to see Sandpoint grow going forward. So, but as Jennifer said, I mean, there were so many, you know, the pandemic was what you might call a black swan event. Nobody saw that coming, and it rocked us just like it rocked pretty much every community, you know, across the world. So I don't know that there's any more that we could have done to prepare ourselves for something like that. But and then, you know, also you might say a bit of a surprise to us was the amount of growth that inspired. We were already growing rapidly as a town up until that point, and the pandemic just accelerated that growth, and it's continued to accelerate growth, both residential growth as well as tourism here. And you know what, it's a mixed bag, and I can understand how people have mixed feelings about it. If you're a business owner in town, it's great. It's great to see growth because it means that business is doing well, and it means that, you know, that you're going to be profitable, and it's not going to be such a struggle to make a living here in town. But if you're somebody who is living here for, you know, the small town quiet lifestyle, it's, you know, that's impacted because we have more people here, more people, you know, using our resources. You know, I remember I go on the Bay Trail often, probably, you know, almost weekly. I'll take the dog and whatnot. And I remember when I first came here almost 25 years ago, I would regularly go hike on that trail before it was developed. I never saw a soul out there the whole time. I never saw a soul. I go out there today and I'll pass 30 people on
the
trail.
It's a highway, right?
Yeah, but you know what? And some people look at that and say, oh, you know, get me away from these people. I think it's great. I mean, we have wonderful, you know, I was attracted to Sandpoint because of the natural beauty and all of that, but what got me to stay was just how friendly and open and authentic people are here. And so I'm happy to pass, you know, good people to Sandpoint on the trail, but sure. I know that's not for everybody.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think what's really good to hear is that the city is keenly aware of both individual and business needs. And so balancing, I heard the word balance a couple times thrown out here, is essential. It's not, you know, our own personal wants and desires is different in our homes and what we do with our families and things like that. But a city is comprehensive, and that's why you're working on a comprehensive plan. It's dynamic. It's movement. It's moving all over the place. So the fact that the city is so aware of that need of our community, our individuals, our businesses, and balancing that is what I'm hearing you talk about. So that was my first question, and you both answered that, and I appreciate that it really shows the city is aware of the rapid growth and the surprises and being able to meet that growth and the demand on our infrastructure and things like that. Okay, I also noticed while you're planning for the future that there is amazing, unlimited, and constant meetings at the city's website, and thank you for posting those meetings. There's agendas on there. The website is very comprehensive and user-friendly, actually. But so not only are you planning for the future, but you're taking care of current business all the time. And that's shifting and changing, too. So I admire both of your the work and dedication you're doing to have this wonderful city here in North Idaho. So let's get to City Talk.
Okay.
Tell me what you want the listeners here at 88.5. to hear about.
Well, I'm going to start off first with a question that we're getting a lot of community members contacting us about, and either by phone or coming into the city office. and asking about construction on Boyer Avenue up near the airport. That is an airport project. So what's happening there on Boyer along the airport is it's a realignment project funded by federal funds to move the roadway out of the critical zone for the airport. So that's what's happening. The project's expected to continue through the end of the summer, which I know no one wants to hear because we're at peak season and lots of traffic impacts. And we also then have ITD with a project on Highway 2200 Fifth Avenue by the Visitor Center. So we're impacted going north and south there, and people are impacted now on Boyer as well, too. But to clarify, so the city does the permitting for that project, but neither of those are city projects. We do have some street projects and sidewalk projects that are going to be underway shortly in town that are part of our pavement maintenance and improvement program. But those two projects are the county's and ITD's.
And that one of those is on Division, is that right?
One Boyer and then on Fifth Avenue.
Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, okay. It's actually our project on Division.
Oh, okay.
So our project on Division is
by the middle school and the high school.
Yeah, right there about across from the high school. And that's about improvements, getting some separation on the pedestrian pathway. That's kind of been an ongoing issue for us. And we did a Division corridor study about and looked at safety concerns along Division. And then also that we're impacted right there on that walkway on that east side along Division because we don't have the space with that walkway and the roadway. So we'll be extending that. We'll be getting more space in there. So you will not see trees added as part of the project probably this year, but that will be happening by early next spring. So it's a beautification, but it's really about safety improvements along the corridor. And our plans ultimately extend all the way along Division to Baldy. So,
fantastic. Speaking about the airport, I've noticed, and I know other people have mentioned, larger and more jets flying in. So is there a limit or is there a requirement for, you know, a limit to how big a plane can be and land in Sandpoint? Who regulates that?
FAA regulates that, and that's based on standards, things like runway length and other things that the city has no role in, nor does the airport board.
Or the county.
Correct.
Okay. I think about infrastructure as far as, length of runway and being able to house all of that, but I guess that's out of our purview.
Yeah, we definitely have in this small community, and I think that adds to some of the complexity when we're doing planning and the complexity around getting out of town is we have so many means of transportation in a community this size with planes, trains, bikes, pedestrians, and then you add the boats, both non-motorized and motorized coming in. So, you know, really thinking about transportation. And again, for me, really, it comes down to balance and how do we best achieve the balance across all of those modes.
Yep. And here comes Amy. Hi, Amy Tweeten. Come on in. So we'll be talking with city planner Amy Tweeten, too. She's joining us. And there's your microphone.
Thank you.
So welcome. And so really talking, what about the e-bikes, folks? I'm really curious about that because I see young kids, and I know how old they are. They went to the Waldorf school, riding e-bikes down Pine Street really fast. Seems like. I don't know.
Yeah, e-bikes are a challenge for us. And actually, there's was quite a bit of discussion about e-bikes in that watershed recreation plan that the mayor was referencing, and not in terms of solutions at this point, but really us needing to come up with policy in that regard. And it's kind of like these population changes and shifts. Once again, the e-bike growth has been so quickly that I don't know that anybody's come up with the right answer, but we're certainly paying attention to what other communities are doing and in that regard. And we're going to have to figure out the balance with e-bikes as well, not just up in the watershed and on our single track trails up there, but also downtown, both mm-hmm. from our trails and then also what's happening on our streets.
Right,
so
the safety issue and possibly training and ages and things like that. It's a great thing that young kids are riding e-bikes. I like that thought of them being independent and getting around. But
some of them go really fast.
I know. That's
yeah.
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Pine Street. Woo. Anyways. So there's that. And this is all. We're here with City Talk with Mayor Ronstadt, Jennifer Stapleton, City Administrator, and now City Planner, Amy Tweeten. So what else do we want to talk about? City Talk, it's your turn.
Everyone. You want to talk about the waterfront competition?
Let me bring up one thing sure. because this is coming up at our next, not this next week, but our first council meeting on August 2nd. Mm-hmm. We'll be bringing forward for council consideration passage of a housing authority, which will be the first in the region. In fact, there's only 5 in Idaho. This would be the 6th. And this is something that we've been working on for quite some time. In 2019, the city did a housing study. And, you know, of course, for a long time, we've seen this issue of housing affordability continue to be a challenge. But the rubber didn't really, or I guess the stuff didn't really hit the fan until the pandemic onset. And we really saw housing prices explode at that time. And I launched a mayor's initiative. A mayor's task force on housing affordability, and that was in 2021 and into 2022. And I was putting it to employers as well as developers and other community stakeholders and community leaders to see what we can do to try to come up with some solutions for housing affordability. And one thing that kept that was just a constant theme, it even came up in the 2019 election, actually, was establishment of a housing authority that could really be a powerful tool for us to be able to.
What would a housing authority, how would that support?
It happens in a number of different ways. And, these can be specific to any given community. So one vision that I have here that I think could do really well for us here locally is the city, and particularly the city utility, has a number of properties that are underutilized. You could say the same possibly for the county, for the school district, for other public entities locally. But we could take some of those resources and use those lands to develop a public-private partnership where we invite a developer to engage in the project, build housing that's below market. And it's below market specifically because, there are subsidies and things that can be leveraged by Idaho Housing and Finance Association, which is basically the state's arm of HUD. But there's another tool that could be used that's more locally, really more market driven, which would basically be taking the cost of the land. If the public entity, let's say it's the city utility in this case, were to put up the land, and that would take the cost of the land out of the housing, which typically runs between 10 and 20% of the cost of the housing. So we could conceivably get a housing product that specifically meets the needs of the community. So it would be the housing authority that would define, in the city of Sandpoint in this case, define what those needs are, who we're trying to target here.
So the land becomes the affordability factor.
That's
in a
right.
sense.
Yeah, but then you know how these things work with, it's like with grants, you know, you get one subsidy, whether in this case through the city or through the local housing authority. Idaho Housing and Finance will pitch in something, and one of the tools that they can offer is infrastructure. They can basically pay the cost of getting that infrastructure to the property. So we're talking roads and curbs and gutters and
right.
you know, power and all the water and all
lowering,
those things.
Lowering the cost.
Yeah. So you know, if we layer in multiple subsidies, we can get the cost down, you know, 10 or 15% here and 10 or 15% here, and
Because the city, I'm hearing what you're saying, is the city can bring in federal and state funds for the infrastructure projects to keep the cost low. The land becomes a leverage because it can be given basically into the project. And so then it's the construction cost
becomes the... Yeah, that's right. And to be clear...
So there's hope.
Yeah, there. I think so. Absolutely. And you know, IHFA, that's the state arm that would offer those federal subsidies. It wouldn't come through the city. The city may be an applicant that gets awarded, or a co-applicant. It could go to the developer ultimately, but it would be in partnership, a public-private partnership with the city, with the housing authority. If there's another public entity that's involved. So there's a lot that can be done there, but the housing authority would be the body, or would be a body that could essentially, you know, put a plan like that together and implement it.
Right. It sounds like also getting bids from the construction and the developers would be an essential part of public knowledge of what's going on and stuff like that on those kind of projects. Fantastic. Good news, because we don't want folks to have to drive to... what would we call it? Athol or Haley, right?
Hopefully they don't have to drive to Haley.
in order to live here, work here, and enjoy our beautiful community.
That's right. We want people to be able to live where they work and to be able to afford their housing.
Absolutely.
And for people that don't know, when we talk about housing affordability, what that really means is HUD has determined that you shouldn't spend more. If you're spending more than 30% of your income on housing, then you're spending too much, right? Mm-hmm. And so that should be the goal. And here in Bonner County, I think our median income right now is $52,000 or something like that, which has gone up substantially in recent years. So that's a good thing, is that wages are going up. But but there's still a lot of people here that are far below that income level, and they need housing too. And those are essential workers. They're people that, you know, that live and work in our community. So we need to have solutions for everybody.
Sounds like the city's working on that. That's good news. We like good news. Jennifer, you mentioned the design plan. Is this the time to go into that?
Yeah, because I think it really ties into the comp plan and how those... you're probably going to have questions on how those two things fit together. So,
absolutely.
And they're kind of coming together at the same time by design. We did, council approved, and we launched a downtown waterfront design competition earlier this year. We opened it late February of this year. And in our original plan, we would be all the way into phase three of that competition by now and getting ready to get final products at the end of next month. And we've had to put extend time on that design competition based on feedback we've got from our three design teams that were selected to move into phase two and are tackling the challenging problems in our community that we've kind of talked about, how we protect the historic character of our downtown, what type of development fits with our downtown, protecting that historic character, and then meets the market today, and looking at parking needs, parking expansion on the city, city lot in our downtown, and then also taking our concepts for City Beach and down on the waterfront, and moving those forward, kind of revitalizing those and looking at final changes before we go into design. So teams are working very hard right now, up against a deadline. So the three teams, their concepts that will go out for public input are due August 1st. And
this is for the design of the waterfront.
It's more than the design of the waterfront. It's the design of the waterfront, and it's really master planning downtown, considering the city parking lot. The broader challenge to the teams is complex. It's looking at stormwater management downtown. It's looking at pedestrian, bike, vehicle access. It's looking at the parking issues. It's looking at private design and how that integrates with our waterfront, protection of the waterfront, and visions for city-owned property along the waterfront. So it's really all of it. And it'll be interesting what the teams come in with, because it was so complex. You're going to probably see one team maybe focus in on one area and another team maybe giving some attention to that area, but then looking at something different. So ultimately, their concepts are due to the city and to our competition manager August 1st. And we will be putting those out both online so people can see them electronically and provide comment and feedback, and as well as in person. So that display, both online and in person, will start Saturday, August 5th. Online will be via our website, and in person, that first August 5th viewing will be down at Jeff Jones Square while Farmers Market's happening. So
every opportunity to be involved. We want a community that's involved.
Yes, yep.
And really hear from people. You're going to have a mixed ideas, but, you know, you get a sense. You'll get a balance. Again, use that word.
And so, again, you know, there's been some debate on why do this through a competition. Mm-hmm. Typically, our approach would be hire a team, hire a consulting firm to lead this effort forward. In essence, what you're seeing out of this process is you've got three different consulting groups, and we may hear from the public that they like elements of one and not another. And so as we move into stage three at the end of August, that's selecting one firm and finalizing concepts and plans. But then that is maybe incorporating elements from the other teams.
Exactly.
So, and then also with this process, there is the public comment process, and that will happen from August 5th through the 14th. Mm-hmm. And so we will have these online electronically for people to provide feedback. We will have in person. We're down at the farmers market, both that August 5th market as well as the following weekend. And then we're going to have schedules throughout that two-week period where it's an open house down at City Hall. People can come in and provide feedback. We'll have about 3 to 4 boards per team that people will be able to come in and view and provide comment on. And then the jury will be meeting on those submissions and presentations from August 14th through the 15th, ultimately making a recommendation to the City Council for selection of a team at the August 16th council meeting, which also is the day that we have our public hearing on our budget and our fees for next fiscal year. So lots going on in the next month in regard to the design competition when it's been really quiet for some time.
Sure.
But again, that's been with feedback from the teams that there was a lot of complexity. They had to consider all of our master planning efforts to date and really take a holistic picture at this downtown and come up with concepts for how we're protecting the historic character, for how we're moving forward concepts on the waterfront, what guidelines we might be putting for private design in the future, and again, what we're doing on the public parking lot and how do we address the need for future parking on our own lot.
This is not simple. So let's move over to something that is simple, the comprehensive plan. Amy?
Sure.
Amy Tweeten, tell us a little bit about what this, you're the city planner?
Correct.
You just get a little closer to the mic.
Okay.
There you go. Perfect. And what is your job, and what is the comprehensive plan, and how does it fit in with the design competition?
My position of city planner, it covers both long and short range.
Okay, we're going to use this mic. Something's wrong with that one. Switching mics here. Thank you for your patience.
How's that?
Much better.
Okay. My position covers both current and long range planning. So current planning is development applications, subdivisions, rezonings, those active developments. And then the long-range planning that had started before I arrived is a comprehensive plan, which we are to the point of having a final draft. And we will have our first public hearing on that August 1st at the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Well, one of the things that just struck me is that it's a big job, first of all. But this long-range planning is, tell us about that a little bit more, the long-range plan. It incorporates everything. And another question, I'll just throw it in there, for all the construction and conditional use permits and rezoning, has that increased quite a bit in the last 2 or 3 years?
It has. I've been here 18 months now. Okay. I started January of 2022, and 22 was a record year. Mm. If you look at the level of development applications, it was significantly higher. 2023, slightly less so, but we still have a steady amount of requests coming through. But the comprehensive plan, so long-range planning, is the long-term 20-year vision of the community, and it touches on everything from economic development to housing to transportation, natural resources. So it has what is in the plan is established by state law, what you need to incorporate. And again, this process started back in 2019, so it's been a long process. But we've also kind of tried to re-engage the public as we were drafting the chapters. And then we did a series of workshops. Then it went back to the Planning and Zoning Commission to incorporate what that input was. Then the commission and council had a joint session to talk through any additional changes. So now we're to the point of having a fully, we hope, vetted draft for the public to weigh in on.
And when will that be available for the public? And I just want to throw out the website for the city is sandpointidaho.gov.
Right. And on the website, you'll go to master plans and the comprehensive plan update. So the draft and all of the appendices that go with the plan are there and available. And although the one appendice that is referenced but is not there will be the results of the downtown waterfront competition that Jennifer just spoke about. So what the plan also incorporated was there had been a lot of master plans going through the process at the same time. So all of those master plans that also had a lot of public engagement are referenced in the comprehensive plan. So they're all tied together. Whether it's parks and rec or urban forestry or multimodal.
Good heavens. I don't think most people understand how much work it is involved in running a city and, you know, having planning and infrastructure and foundation is vital. What do you have to say about that, Mayor Ronstadt?
I agree.
I think one thing that we haven't talked about that will be a next step coming out of the comprehensive plan, too, will be really finalizing our area of city impact and what the plan is there. So we're speaking, we need to get to a next level of sub-area planning, which hasn't happened yet for the area that is outside our city limits, that impacts us in city limits and is likely to be an area where you see where you're going to see dense growth in the future. One thing we heard out of our study last year, looking at housing and looking at land use in city limits, is we're running out of vacant land, and particularly with development at the uptick that it's taken in the last several years. So kind of anything that was developable and had been sitting there and but maybe wasn't the easiest to pick off, that's what we've been kind of seeing coming through over the last couple of years. But now looking outside of our city boundaries and what is the plan there, and that will require negotiation with the county, but is an important topic because when you get outside of city limits, thinking about utilities and requirement of urban utilities and what type of development in an area that's likely to become part of the city in the future is a very important discussion and something that has been on the minds of community members recently as we've looked at adjacent jurisdictions to Sandpoint, where some of those issues have come up, and some subdivisions have been built outside of city limits, but not typically what you would see in accordance with urban standards. So not the sidewalks, not all of the urban utilities.
So the city ends, the county picks up, and that place where they meet can be something to pay attention to.
Yeah, that's important and a required part of the land use, Idaho, our Land Use Act, that we do need to be looking at that. We do need to have a plan. And again, it's about the city's growth, but it's about density and where you're kind of meeting from what's rural, what is in an urban boundary currently, and where you're likely to see future growth and where density is going to start to occur, what that looks like and how that should look and who's weighing in on that.
Right. And how do you partner with Ponderé? It's right there. And the city comes right up to Ponderé, I'm imagining. They have a border.
Well, that becomes an interesting relationship for us, too. I mean, you're talking about two distinct jurisdictions. So much like Sandpoint has a comprehensive plan, Ponderé has their own comprehensive plan. Kootenai has their comprehensive plan, as does Dover, both thinking about their city limits and area city impact. Some of those areas of city impact, when you have adjacent cities like we do, you can start to see and could come out in the future where we have redundancy in our area city impact. So we're crossing over one another, and dependent how development happens, it may be part of one city or it might be part of another. But then when you look at our jurisdictions around us as well, particularly for City of Ponderé and City of Kootenai, we are the water. So it's Sandpoint Water behind the other two cities. And that's something that is we've been in a lot of discussions about recently and is a priority for us as we get moving forward in coming months and the next year, that there have been discussions in the past about how that works, but that never resulted in formal agreements between the jurisdictions. And that's going to be a real key in terms of who's paying for that infrastructure, what is the priority for the infrastructure. And really, as we look at it, that's an opportunity, too, for the other cities to maybe take a larger role in the utilities within their boundaries and what's happening in their ACI, because a lot of that is dictated by utilities. But for Ponderé and Kootenai, neither one has either a water utility or a wastewater utility. So it's city water. And some rural water districts, and then for Kootenai and Ponderé, it's Kootenai-Ponderé Sewer District. So
Kootenai and Ponderé rely on and are, they rely on the city water.
Yes, yeah. Correct.
And so does the city have priority if water became an issue?
Well, it's where we're serving, we have an obligation for everyone we're serving to ensure adequate water flow and to ensure adequate infrastructure, because they're all our ratepayers. Okay. But you bring up an interesting question, and that's where these agreements are going to be really important, because it is a City of Sandpoint utility, and it's where it becomes challenging when you have as much development as you do right now. We're focused on what's happening in our city boundaries, where a district would be a different thing, and it's not a water district. It is a City of Sandpoint utility.
Yeah. Interesting. And we're really being pushed up against that threshold of capacity right now, particularly in Ponderé and Kootenai. We're hitting that threshold where we're seeing lower pressures and lower flow volumes out at the periphery of our system there. And so that puts a pause on development out there. And until we get these issues that Jennifer's brought up resolved, not just the area of city impact, but really addressing how are we going to invest in our infrastructure to be able to continue to grow our system and support the population growth that we're seeing right now. But this is a really interesting issue, because if a capital investment requires the city to bond, well, it doesn't make sense for the City of Sandpoint taxpayers to to approve a bond, right, for the city of Kootenai or the city of Ponderay, right? So ultimately, it needs to be that city that takes the responsibility for a capital bond, for instance. So we need to work. Those are the conversations that we need to have to work through who takes responsibility for infrastructure where. But recognizing that, yeah, the city of Sandpoint has been the service provider for this region historically and presumably into the future. And so we need to make sure that we have clear agreements that ensure that Sandpoint ratepayers aren't, you know, footing the bill for everybody else, right?
Or for out of control growth of some sort that wasn't. But it sounds like you're keenly aware of it. And I think I heard the word agreement several times. And getting those agreements is what you're working on.
That's right.
Yep. So. Yeah. They had been talked about in the past, but a resolution had occurred, but it never got to the level of a formal agreement. And at the time, with development the way that it was here and growth at 1.5%, it was, you know, it again, what we've seen, that accelerated growth over the last couple of years has really changed the need to so that these issues need to be addressed now. They aren't issues for the future. So we're impacted by that. And it kind of goes back to our conversation at the beginning where we're responding to what's happening currently and planning for the future. And it's all at one time.
Yeah, it would have been wise if, you know, 30 years ago or more, the city had worked out these agreements and or we had approached water service and sewer service as a regional, you know, as a district, as a utility district. That would have made a lot of sense. And it wouldn't put us all in the position that we're in now. But like Jennifer says, you know, it's been incremental 1.5% growth on average. 1.2, I think, historically has been the average. And so there, it's easy to just kind of keep kicking the can down the road forever. And then we get to a place where we're at right now, where we're really kind of bursting at the seams. And we've had, you know, 4%+ growth on average over the last like 6 years. It's been crazy. Right. And so, you know, we're at that place where something's got to be done now. We can't just keep doing this. So, anyway,
one of the things that we know is as our world turns and changes, water is essential, clean, drinkable water. Luckily here in North Idaho, we have abundant supply. It's the infrastructure to provide that is what I'm hearing. And to guarantee that you know, if you're taking, I guess you take some of the drinking water out of the lake at some point in time as the reservoir dissipates during the year.
Yeah. We about half of our potable water comes from the lake plant, and mm-hmm. and we could conceivably double the capacity of that lake plant. Mm-hmm. So we certainly have what we need to support growth at you know in terms of water capacity. It really comes down to those other elements of infrastructure. You know, the enough pipe diameter, say, or enough sure. pressure and things like that to get it to where we need the new service. So.
We're fortunate.
Yeah,
it's not that definitely. Way everywhere.
And another thing, you know, when we talk about affordability, I've had this conversation a lot, but one thing that's noticeable about Sandpoint rates is our water rates are higher relatively compared to other cities. And there's basically two reasons for that is we have redundant infrastructure. We have not just the plant up at Sand Creek that you mentioned that used to provide all of our potable water until about 2012. Now we have the lake plant. So we've got both of those, you know, plants. But then in addition to that, anytime you're treating surface water rather than a deep well, it requires a deeper level of treatment. And that's costly. And so that's those two factors are, you know, the primary factors that make Sandpoint rates higher than comparable cities.
Well, that's good to know. I'm sure our listeners will be thrilled to know that here in Sandpoint, you're looking out for the Sandpoint taxpayers by being aware of your, you know, the costs for Kootenai and Ponderay is being held by them. So because that's, you know, people are pinching pennies these days too. And so we have about 6 or 7 minutes left. What else do we want to cover?
You want an update on the Traverse Park on the James Russell Sports Center?
Oh, yes.
Quickly.
Everyone wants that.
So we are in final design of of that facility. And in fact, just before this meeting, I was in another meeting where we were going over final comments on the 50% design, and by Friday, it's 95%. Okay. So we are expecting our general contractor on this project is Juno Construction, and they will be going out to bid, getting bids. We are behind the timeline we had initially planned for this project as well. And anyone doing construction or development understands the challenges of both the availability of the construction market as well as supply chain makes development and building really challenging right now. So we originally were planning on a groundbreaking this summer, but really to get that competitiveness for bids, we determined that we needed to wait until this fall. And that's about trying to balance, again, getting across the finish line with this project, but also balancing being good stewards of the dollars. I mean, our budget for this project is the $7.5 million that we got from the James Russell family. But we have also leveraged that now with funding for expansion of the skate park. The city council approved $300,000 for expansion of the skate park. We've been partnering with the 7B Skate Association, Bonner County Skate Association, on their fundraising efforts as well. They've raised about $50,000, and we're hoping to get to about a $600,000 expansion of that facility, which we already have Dreamland on board, and they will be constructing that next spring. And then we went to the state and applied for a land water conservation fund for expansion improvements needed for the playground and the addition of a splash pad at Traverse there adjacent to the facility. We're in final stages of a $500,000 grant for that. And so the council's approved a budget of about $500,000 for that. So that'll be a $1 million upgrade and expansion much needed for that playground as well. So we are no longer ADA compliant. And general lifespan of a playground is 10 years. We're well over that with that playground. So there's some components we can use. There are definitely components that need to be replaced. And in addition, then we've been partnering with POP, because we do a lot of partnering, and they've been successful in tens of thousands of dollars in grants for improvements to that bike skills course that really isn't much of a bike skills course right now. It's really there's some jumps and some kind of things that have been developed across time with kids really riding their bikes in that area. So that's planned for later this summer, and Geno Construction is going to be donating services for that. And we just received another donation yesterday for some custom-built lockers that will be going into the facility. So we've really leveraged that initial $7.5 million donation into in excess of a $10 million project. But pulling it all together has been complicated, but I think what the community can look forward to is a groundbreaking later this fall. So we'll be announcing that when we're sure of the date. And we are confident we will be under construction with that facility next year. We are not going to commit to a completion date on the facility itself because, again, supply chain is is such a challenge that there may be elements we're waiting for. So,
well, I have to say bravo for the work you're doing. If nothing else, all this information, you can know that you guys are on top of it. And it's deep. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of moving parts. So I want to thank all of you for coming in today. This is our City Talk for July 2023. I've been talking with City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton, City Planner Amy Tweeten, and our Mayor Shelby Ronstadt. So thanks for coming in. Any last words of wisdom?
Treat others well.
Oh, I like that. We like wisdom. Okay,
thank you, Susie.
Yeah, thank you very much. And by the way, this information, this podcast, will be available on our website at KRFY.org shortly after it plays Wednesday, the 19th.